So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
I hit record.
Okay, I hit record.
I did it. Woo!
Woo! All right. Welcome to Feature Creep, colon.
Built-in microwave, semicolon.
Beavers.
Beavers!
Woo! So this is an attempt to make a gem for the people. So one way we're going to hopefully fill out our back catalog is just do a little, like some shorts to post into dates that we didn't post on. I think, right? That's kind of the plan?
Yeah. Just so there's continuity from week to week, even though we don't want to necessarily go and backfill full episodes. We just want to fill up the calendar so that there's something for
every week. So if you found this little gem, this one is recorded as of June 3rd, 2024. Maybe published retroactively. We'll see. So we're going to talk about beavers because beavers are super creative and amazing and solve their kind of evolutionary problems in the world that they live in very interesting and fascinating ways.
Totally.
Yeah, they are really kind of, I think as you mentioned, when I brought up the beaver thing the other day and you were like, what made you think of that? And I was like, how are you not always thinking of beavers? What do you mean? What made me think of that?
Both of us basically said that, like, who isn't constantly thinking of magnificent beavers?
Right. So I imagine most people know what a beaver is. If you do not know what a beaver is, it's a semi-aquatic rodent of the Northern Hemisphere. There are two existing species, the North American beaver and the Eurasian beaver. They're the second largest living rodent after capybaras. They weigh up to 50 kilograms, roughly 110 pounds. They have stout bodies with large heads, long chisel-like incisors, brown or gray fur, hand-like front feet, webbed back feet, and tails that are flat and scaly.
They are amazing. They're really big too. I mean, like when you think of rodents, you think of like squirrels and rabbits and stuff, but like beavers are big.
Critters. Yeah, they're big critters. They're pretty amazing. They're well known for basically building dams. Which is kind of what, you know, what we were talking about before we started recording the other day in our chat messages was that it's kind of an argument for sentience, right? Or it's good evidence for like the level of intelligence that other creatures besides humans can possess.
I think they are and the reason I mentioned that is because a lot of times I think people have this idea that like animals are less intelligent than people, and it's that is not, first of all, intelligence is not like a single data point that is on a hierarchy of like higher number, lower number. It's not IQ, which is flawed for many reasons and doesn't even reflect intelligence among humans, but like interspecies intelligence, like beavers are engineers. They do things very on purpose. They have an end goal in mind and they know when they've reached it. So they have the ability to envision a future state and then do things to make that state occur or to put themselves in that state in the future. So they're not just like wandering around bumping into things, reacting to the environment. They're taking active part and shaping the environment to their desires and will and to suit their purposes. And they do this over a long period of time with sustained work. So they are engineers. They are sentient. They have feelings. They have, they anticipate future states of being, and they are like really good at changing their surroundings to suit their purposes, just like people are. And I just think that like it's maybe harder to tell when you look at like a squirrel making a nest, because they're like, they're just gathering leaves and acorns, right? But same thing, they're engineering things just on a smaller scale. With beavers, it's so hard to ignore because it's such a large effect that they have on their surroundings, and they do these really complicated sustained tasks to get to that point. So that's why I find them fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, their ability to so they use their large flat incisors to basically eat and chew wood, right?
Yeah.
So they eat green.
They eat like vegetation, right? Like they chew apart tree trunks to knock the trees down so that they can shape them and move them to different places. But I think they eat green stuff.
Yeah, but they eat. According to Wikipedia, as of 2024, what are we? June 3rd.
Yeah.
2024. They according to Wikipedia, they have an herbaceous and generalist diet. During the spring and summer, they mainly feed on herbaceous plants such as leaves, roots, herbs, ferns, grasses, sedges, water lilies, etc., etc. During the fall or winter months, they'll eat more bark and the cambium of woody plants. Tree and shrub species consumed are like aspen, birch, oak, dogwood, willow, alder. So they're eating the kind of like the young growth of the plants, right? So they're not eating the heartwood. They're not eating the dry dead portion of the woody plants. They're basically chewing off the bark and eating the sort of live nutrient dense portions of it. But they can use their incisors to cut through the harder parts of the woody plant and cut
like
down
a saw.
Like a saw. And so they cut down these trees and they're amazing at it. Like they plan where the tree's going to fall. They plan how to cut it so that it falls in that direction. They know to be well clear of it. It's not like they're just like chewing on it till it falls. Like they chew out the trunk. And then they set it up such that when the wind blows, it blows over.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. Like they know to be well clear of it. It's much safer. So they like go around and then they cut them up into logs and drag these logs around. And they create that, like the whole point of the dam is to create this wet environment where they're much safer, right? So they're safer in the slow moving river. They like very slow moving water. They don't necessarily like standing water. They create dams that the water still flows. It's just really slows it down.
Yeah.
And then they create these waterways where they can both be safer to traverse their environment, because when they're in the water, they're safer from a lot of predators. Like there's not a lot of natural predators in the water that bothers them. Like they're the kind of the master of that domain.
Right.
But then things like bears and foxes and wolves and other like predators might be there at a disadvantage on land, but in water, they're relatively safe. So they create this massive network of, what's it called? Like canals and waterways.
Yeah.
They create these dams and then create these waterways where they can then move. The thing that I was watching the other day, they were saying like, I didn't realize they stockpile fresh leaves and things deep underwater. Mm-hmm. So when the lake freezes, they can access them.
They'll
go collect these branches and they'll go stick them in the mud down at the bottom of the lake near their dam where they live. Like they kind of live in the dam space. Like they create these like sort of, what do you call them? Like a lodge sort of
a lodge. So within the dam, what they do is they if they're on the shore or the bank of the river that they've dammed up, right, they swim into the water, they go underwater, and then they enter the dry den that they've set up by swimming, kind of like in James Bond movies where they take a submarine and like dock the submarine in a larger ship, and so they kind of like come up out of the water within the ship that's floating or whatever. So the beavers will go from the riverbank into the pond that they've created underwater and then resurface inside of a dome they've basically built within the dam that they've created that slows the water down, that creates the pond that gives them access to the den from the water and not from land. And so like they basically create this enormous moat around their dam, and then inside of the dam is where they have their house. And so they can get back up onto relatively dry land inside of the dam where they have their den and like raise their young and all that sort of stuff. And it's protected because it's completely surrounded by water, and to get inside of it, you have to go underwater entirely to get in and out. It's fa- fascinating. Like, they're so good at changing their surroundings in super complicated ways to achieve the goals that they have.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
Yeah, it's super amazing. They have a sort of family life, like a social organization, according to Wikipedia. The core of a beaver social organization is the family, which is composed of an adult male, an adult female in a monogamous pair, and their offspring. Because families can have many as 10 members, groups about this size require multiple lodges. They do mutual grooming, play fighting, maintain bonds between family members, and aggression between them is uncommon. It's like they have whole societies, right? Like they create these towns, right? It's like a fucking beaver town.
They used to be really prevalent on the North American continent before European invasion and colonization almost caused them to go extinct. They're really, really formidable when they're not being eradicated by humans.
Right. When they're, like, talk about species that's an environmental engineer. Like, they're super good at it. They, or an ecosystem engineer, as it's termed in the Wikipedia article. They're really good at, few other animals appear to do more to shape their environment than humans, but then beavers are like really high up on that list. They entirely alter the path of streams and rivers. They create extensive wetland habitats. They often increase open water areas, especially freshwater areas. I mean, like, as humans, this is something like we should be distinctly interested in, right? Like,
yes.
The beaver ponds and wetlands that succeed them remove sediment and pollutant from waterways. They often stop the loss of important, like, it really slows down, like, the overall erosion of, like, important nutrients in soil, like, in a given area. Because rivers, unchecked, just sweep off all of the topsoil, right? Like, all of the nutrient-rich stuff and bring it out. I mean, this is also why river deltas become these, like, really lush, like, amazingly diverse wetlands as well, which are also great things. But it's, like, you can imagine that, but the beavers are creating that way upstream, like, somewhere that normally wouldn't have that.
They're kind of like essential to the expansion and development and enhancement of, like, the biome.
They're a huge part of, like, just radically changing the biome to something potentially more habitable, at least for a wider variety of species.
They cause, like, a proliferation.
Yeah, exactly.
They're so fascinating.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear about that story about where they, like, airdropped beavers?
I think I've heard of that.
I think you have too, because I think we might have talked about it before. And I saw at in 2020, there was an exhibit at the Franconia Sculpture Park, which I've mentioned here before, where they did an artist did an installation about beavers and about the redistribution of beavers, basically. Like, they were captured and crated up and dropped into an area where there weren't any beavers, and I don't remember all of the exact details.
I found a Wikipedia article about it. So the Wikipedia article is entitled. It's very entitled.
Very entitled article. Yes. Hard to be around.
It's called Beaver Drop. And the Beaver Drop was a 1948 Idaho Department of Fish and Game program to relocate beavers from northwestern Idaho to Chamberlain Basin in central Idaho. It involved moving 76 beavers by airplane and parachuting them down to the ground. It's such a nuts thing. Like, they were, I mean, I don't want to stop you from envisioning little beavers in adorable little like jumpsuits, yes, and parachutes, like lined up and jumping out of an airplane to go do their business on the ground, like to go do be ecological engineers right, in a new location. But practically speaking, essentially there were drop boxes, right, which you can imagine, yeah, are kind of these like wood crates with holes in them so that the beavers can breathe, and there, mm-hmm, were parachutes on the crates so such that they
let pop go open when they hit the ground.
Yeah, they'd pop open when they hit the ground, and the beavers could then proliferate.
Yes,
prolit. Thank you. I knew there was a letter in there. yeah. Anyway, yeah, it's amazing. It's such a really interesting. It's such a bizarre and kind of ingenious approach to the whole thing. The operation in 1949, the operation was deemed successful after officials observed the beavers had made homes in the new areas. In 1949, Popular Mechanic magazine published an article about the parachuting beavers, calling the beavers para beavers. Parachuting provided to be more cost effective. Parachuting proved to be more cost effective, and it had lower mortality rate than other methods of relocation, which I can understand because like you're limiting the amount of time the beavers are subject to incarceration. I mean, what do you call it when it's an animal?
Impound?
Yeah. Well, anyway, they were handled less, right? Like I'm sure it was slightly more traumatic, but they spent overall less time being cooped up. They had more time to be back in their natural environment where they can sort of tend to their own needs.
Yeah. Which,
you know, I get why this worked.
It seemed like a pretty practical solution to the problem when I learned about it at the time. I mean,
yeah. Apparently they haven't, it's been about 50 years. So the state still relocates beavers from time to time. But it's been about 50 years since they did relocation by air. I can also imagine now, like there's better understanding about animal handling, and it probably becomes more cost effective just to chuck them in a crate on the back of a truck and drive them somewhere. Just because of like, they're probably also not like, there's less remote places probably in Idaho than maybe when they first started this. I imagine there's more access roads and things. I mean, I don't fucking know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, parachuting beavers, ridiculous.
Parachuting beavers.
I'm not sure how this could be like linked up. Like we should probably wrap this up, but I'm not sure how to link this up to art and design specifically. But I do want to say, if you're listening to this, please send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. You can email Dana, D-A-N-A, at fcbm.io. She would love to hear from you because she's the founder of this podcast, the CEO.
That's right.
And founder. So you could.
The reason for our existence.
The reason for our existence, exactly. And then the other thing I want to say is just that, maybe unfortunately the research team is on. They're on strike right now, I think, the color research team.
They're like, nyet!
Nyet.
We won't work a minute more until you pay us more cookies for our work.
Exactly.
And I just haven't had a chance to get those cookies yet.
Yep. So so you're going to have to just maybe beaver pelt brown. Well, we had two colors, actually. So beavers come in a brown and a gray.
Oh, so there you go.
Yeah.
I wonder which one the rapacious Europeans thought was more attractive from an aesthetic coat making standpoint, since that's what they did with the beavers. They're like, look at these amazing ecological engineers. Let's turn them into dead coats.
Right.
God. Like, fuck you guys. God, the British Empire. Making coats out of beavers is like the British Empire of coat making ideas.
Right. And like fucking hats and shit, like Jesus.
Yes, God,
yeah.
That's kind of like the MO of the British Empire. Let's take something spectacular, unique, amazing, and useful, and just ruin it and drag it down to our level,
right?
And create something completely pointless and mediocre out of something that used to be amazing and full of utility, like. That's so British.
Right.
God.
Yeah, the colonialism of somebody think of the beavers.
Yeah, colonialism x beavers, right? Ends up hats. What else do we know about beavers? How does it say anything in the wiki article about how big they are? I feel like,
yeah, even every time, 110
fucking that's like only 12 pounds smaller than me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the largest they can get. I mean, they're, but yeah,
me and beavers, we're practically the same,
right? Yeah. Yeah, they're
I feel like
amazing.
There's quite a few of them in Minnesota. Like, I have seen a real beaver dam in person before.
Yeah, I have too. It's
Have you?
Yeah, they're it's kind of interesting. Like, it's very recognizable once you see it.
Yeah.
And also, when you're somewhere where beavers are in the area, it's pretty amazing to see the trees that have been cut down, like, because they leave the stumps and they have that. It doesn't look like human chainsaw cuttings. It's like,
right, it looks kind of like a pencil that you sharpen with a knife.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. The other funny thing about it is how they're like, but if you don't see the cut, the cuttings, the shavings do kind of look like a chainsaw or something. Like, there's lots of little shavings laying around, like from a freshly beavered tree. I don't know how else you'd put that.
A freshly beavered tree.
Right.
That's a good verb, I think, beavered.
Yeah.
I need to beaver this.
Yeah.
Do you know, are beavers one of the types of rodents where if they don't chew stuff with their teeth grow too long and can, like, harm them? There are other critters like that, other rodents, where their teeth are in a constant state of growth. And so if they don't use them to bite things, the teeth don't get filed down or broken off. And then the teeth can grow too long. And as they grow, they curl just like fingernails curl if you let your fingernails get too long. And they can, on some rodents, the teeth can grow into their own throat if they're not careful.
According,
and so they have to.
Yeah, so according to the nationalzoo.sl.edu, their teeth grow continuously throughout their life.
Okay, yeah, so you got it. They chewing on stuff is, like, actually really important for their survival then. That's amazing.
Yeah, it, so their softer dentine, which is not the enamel, like, we have dentine and then enamel on the outside of our teeth, and then our teeth are basically permanent. The dentine wears away faster, so they wear down unevenly, which creates that sort of chiseled shape, which is sort of an adaptation, right? So they can,
yes,
their teeth sharp, sort of self sharpen as they chew, which is pretty cool. So
yeah. They're not super aggressive towards people, are they?
No, they're not. They are, let's see, so.
Their cousins, capybaras, are usually nice to people too, but I've heard that every once in a while they'll give you a little bite.
Oh, the cap. Yeah. Like, I mean, they're wild animals, right? Like, beavers are probably the same thing. It's like, no, they're not aggressive. If you pick one up, it's going to be fucking aggressive. Like, they're not, you know.
Do not want.
Yeah. They're self-protecting.
I feel like at one of the nature centers here in Minnesota, or maybe one of the, like, God, was it at the Science Museum at one point in time? I don't remember the context or the timing in the past of when I saw this, but I remember seeing essentially kind of like a cross section of a lake and beaver dam, so that you could see where they started on the shore, swam underwater, and then you could see,
I remember this,
how like a cross section of how the dam was built, so you could see where they would come up onto the landing inside of the dam where they have their den, and how they organize the internal spaces of where they, like, live and do things. And I thought that was, like, really fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, just the, like, durability of their constructions and you cannot look at it and think for a moment, oh, they don't know what they're doing, or, like, this is all by accident, or they're just, like, dumb animals reacting to their environment or something. Like, it's very well thought out. I mean, like, there's no way that most people would be able to put something like that together.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly. No, it's, like, it's a very, ingenious. I did find a thing about interactions with humans in the Wikipedia article that I think is interesting. So beavers sometimes come into conflicts with humans over land use. Individual beavers may be labeled as nuisance beavers. Well, I yes, but like this is kind of self-evident, right? Like they're damming up riverways and things. Like they're not gonna, they don't give a fuck about our shit. Like they don't know how to, like they're not like, oh, sorry, that guy's doing that thing over there. I'm gonna build my dam politely over here. So they can end up damaging crops, timber stocks, roads, ditches, gardens, pastures via gnawing, eating, digging, and flooding. Right, because they can create these flooded wetlands. They occasionally attack humans and domestic pets, particularly when infected with rabies. I feel like that's kind of a throwaway. It's like most animals that become rabid, obviously, you know, they become very aggressive. But also in defense of their territory or when they feel threatened. Some of these attacks have been fatal, including at least one human death.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Can you imagine death by beaver? It would be so confusing.
I know.
You wouldn't even have time to react before it had killed you.
Right? Yeah. Just like what? What's happening right now?
What they don't tell you is that one person who died was killed by the machete the beaver was wielding.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Machete beaver. Oh my gosh, that's quite amazing.
Yeah.
What if somebody was running away from a beaver and tripped and drowned in the floodplain that they had created?
Right? I don't know.
Passive deaths by beaver.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I love beavers. When we were younger, my best friend growing up was obsessed with beavers and had an alter ego that she named Beverly because she loved beavers so much.
Aw.
Mm-hmm. It's very cute.
It is very cute.
Did you ever see that cartoon Two Angry Beavers? Is it called Two Angry Beavers or just Angry Beavers? I don't remember.
It's called Two Angry Beavers. The Angry Beavers. It's called The Angry Beavers.
The Angry Beavers. They're adorable.
Animated television series by Mitch Schauer on Nickelodeon. and it was 1997 to 2003.
They're beaver brothers who move out of their parents' home to become bachelors in the forest near Oregon. And what's their names? I can't. Norbert and Daggett.
Yes, Norbert and Daggett. That's great. I never saw this. So that was right during the time when I was sort of somewhere between being homeless and living in England. Like it was TV was not really something I had a lot of access to. Like a lot of the homes that I was living in, like whether I was staying with friends or whatever, TV just wasn't a thing that people had, and it wasn't something I could afford. So it was like just didn't have television. You know, and this was before like personal computers on the left, or not even personal computers. This was before like every fucking thing is a screen and you have like a cell phone that just, you know, everything has access to YouTube or whatever. This was all that. So the bit like I was not consuming a lot of video content. I was mostly, you know, occasionally I'd go see a movie or something, but even that like wasn't really high on my radar. Like,
yeah,
it was just,
there was, I feel you on this. There was a period, I think I didn't have television and I didn't have a television in my house and I didn't watch TV anywhere else with any regularity for a period of like, God, it must have been 20 years almost.
Wow. Yeah.
And then when I started watching TV again and saw like commercials, I was like, what is going on?
Right. Yes. It's just like what
nothing makes sense anymore.
Yeah. Do you need to go? I don't know.
I should finish up here because I have to have really boring conversations with people about finances and not beavers, which are infinitely more interesting than the hypothetical scenario of running out of money at the age of 93.
All right. Well, no sweat. let's just, you know, put a pin in it. Ththank you for everybody for listening to another gem for the people.
Right. And if you feel the need to have like colors of the day, just think of like gray and brown beavers and also blood soaked money.
Blood soaked money.
You know, that's where I feel like I'm headed next.
Yes. And that one dead human.
Possibly from a beaver machete.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
This is my question. Could a beaver chop apart a piece of wood and then sharpen it on one edge like a blade and have a wooden machete with which to chase around a person and kill them.
I feel like I get where you're going. The vibe I get from beavers is more like have a tree fall on somebody when they least expect it.
Yes.
Just saying. They just strike me as like not into the hand-to-hand combat thing, yeah. But more like, you know.
If a beaver booby traps a tree, is it a booby tree?
A booby
tree. And not a booby trap.
A beaver booby.
Trap tree.
Trap tree.
A beaver booby trap tree.
Very possibly, yes.
Well, that's what it's called now, so.
Yep.
In my mind, that's what it is. It's going to live there forever. Beaver booby trap tree.
I just want to kind of one last thing I thought of is like, so beavers have hand-like appendages on their front paws.
Yes, they do.
And so I'm reminded of like all the like three animals in particular: beavers, raccoons, and otters.
Otters.
Yes.
When you made the swimming hand motion, I immediately was like, otters.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Thing what swoops into the water, in and out of the water.
Yeah, yeah. When I did animal tracking in Marin on the Point Reyes National Seashore, there were river otters, strictly speaking. They are not the oceanic otters, even though they are very close to the ocean. I think they are river otters that we were tracking.
Yeah.
And there's a point right near the seashore, almost on the coast, there's a little inlet where there's fresh water flows out of it into the ocean, and there's sort of like banks on either side of this flow of water. It's not exactly a river because I don't think it's technically big enough, but anyway, there's like these because it's so close to the sea, there are sand dunes. And one of the things we noticed when we were tracking one afternoon in Marin was the markings of otters that use the sand dunes to slide into the little river and then float around. So it was very cute. You could see where they had been playing all afternoon, and they climb out of the water and run up the hill, and then they slide down the hill back into the water and climb out and run back up again, just like children. It's very adorable.
Yeah.
And that made me think of that. So many animals use their surroundings for their own purposes. Like, it's not the distance between us and other critters is not very far.
No, it really isn't. It's they are incredibly smart in very industrious. Like, I mean that was the whole point of the beaver thing, like that whole thing about being a busy beaver.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have known
beavers
fucking get down to it and are really busy, and like they're creating this space that's like,
you know,
I mean, all life is fascinating, and like the life cycle of all kinds of creatures is amazing. The beavers really struck me as like, man, there's so many easy parallels to connect to as a human, right? You're like, oh, I get that.
Yeah.
They're building their home. Oh, I get that. Like, they're doing this thing for their future. They're, you know, modifying their environment and creating a space that works for them. And they're like, you know, solving these problems like we do.
Yes. Yes. Like, they think about it, they strategize, they get a plan together, and then they follow through on it to get to a goal. It's like,
yep, yeah.
It's very cool. So yeah, beavers.
Yeah.
This is a great little gem.
It is, for really the people. Well, thank you everybody for listening, and I think that's it.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.